holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you, the patrons. They're so generous. They're so supportive. They make sure this show gets to continue by supporting it. But in exchange, they get some cool stuff, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and bonus content galore, ladies and gentlemen. Holy moly. There's the DLC Book Club, 2 episodes out, the podcast version, exclusive to patrons of any level. There is an entire season of Feeling This, the awesome, let's just say it, awesome show with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talking about the feelings behind video games, season 2 on the way. And every Wednesday, the paid DLC program delights, entertains, surprises. We have Lana Bashinsky joining us every single week. This last week, Danish Syed stopped by. He pops in sometimes. We don't even know when it's going to happen. Surprise, excitement, fun, joy. And you can be a part of it by supporting the show at the Cool Ranch level over at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, it's a show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also, games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with 2 N's and 1 T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy that doesn't need your stinking extension. He's filing his taxes on time. Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, tax time. Yeah, I'm there. I'm ready. I am ready, but also tax time really creeps up on me. And then it does that thing, and this is not the tax advice show, but then it does that thing where I'm like, 2022? But it's already 2023, but I'm doing 20. Is it 2021? Is it 2020? And then I don't know what day it is, but I am here, and my taxes are filed.
I often, there are times in the middle of like August or September while I'll go, you know what, Jeff, take a second and just be grateful for the fact that you don't have to think about your taxes right now. I find them so stressful.
I will sit there and go, you know what, Christian? You just did your taxes last year and it was a mess. Yeah. This year, let's be organized. Next year.
That's always the fun lie that you tell yourself. Oh, this is the year that I'll separate my receipts. It's fun. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about the fun stuff, video games. Holy moly, so much stuff to talk about this week. And we have an awesome guest to do that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But oh my goodness, this week I'm excited because DLC stands for Danny's Likeable Club. Because from the Good Gamers Club on TikTok, we've got Danny Bogue joining us for the first time. Hey, Danny.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited. You know, I always listen to the show and I hear that hype music leading up to the beat drop. And here I am. I'm seeing it now. I'm experiencing it in real time. And guys, this is legit.
Well, I'm glad it lived up. But I appreciate you being here. Tell us a little bit about the Good Gamers Club, because I love the notion behind it.
Yeah, sure. So I manage a TikTok account called Good Gamers Club. And the way I always say, it's the club for good people who like good games. Really, only 2 rules I got here is you got to be a good person, treat others well, and like good games. That's it, man. If you do those 2 things, no matter who you are, you're a member.
Love it. Love it. I sense that all of the listeners of this podcast would be immediate members. It very much aligns with our sensibilities here on DLC. So excited to have you on to chat games. And we got a lot to talk about.
I'm ready.
Let's jump right into it. Start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Or by participating in one of our communities. We have a Discord at 5x5DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out in the Discord, chatting it up. Christian and I stopping in, mixing it up. And we also have a subreddit that's also 5x5DLC.reddit.com. I urge you to take part in the community. It's fun folks, good people, good gamers.
That's what we love.
That's what we love. Danny, you are a guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, I know that only patrons can see the video feed. You can check out the Patreon. But I'm currently wearing a Legend of Zelda t-shirt, and I just don't know what type of self-respecting Zelda fan I would be if my story of the week wasn't the deluge of content that we got this past Thursday between both Tears of the Kingdom and Final Fantasy 16. There was just so much to watch. I ran out of time of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Tears of the Kingdom right around the corner. And Nintendo says to themselves, you know what? This game might not sell too well unless we show some people some more of the juicy, juicy footage. hey, I welcome it. I think it's pretty exciting. This game, obviously one of the most highly anticipated titles of the year. You are evidently a huge Zelda fan. Are you a fan of Breath of the Wild? Are you excited for Tears of the Kingdom? Tell me what you thought of the new stuff. I guess this will be the final trailer, pre-release trailer for Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Are you excited?
Yeah, I am. I've got on my lock screen on my phone a countdown timer until May 12th. So I am definitely excited. You know, I've been a Zelda fan for years and years and years, ever since I was a kid. And I haven't loved all of the games, but I enjoy playing all of them. And, you know, some are better than others. I personally am in the camp of a huge Breath of the Wild fan. I know, Jeff, it didn't resonate with you necessarily, but I love it. It really spoke to me. I loved the freedom that was given to the world and the kind of the sandbox play nature of it. What I found interesting about this is that the fandom has been divided over the past intervening 6 years since Breath of the Wild. There are some fans that are like, I just need my linear, give me my dungeons and my story, like, I don't want to say spoon-fed, but very handed directly to me on a silver platter. And then there's, I think, the newer, younger crowd potentially that's coming in and is like, well, this is my first Zelda. Or even just this, I really am excited about the direction that Zelda's going in this way. And what's so funny is I feel like leading up to this trailer release, there have been so many people on my channel on TikTok, but then also just across the wider internet that's been like, man, this game's going to be trash. It's going to be DLC for Breath of the Wild, where they're not showing us anything. They must not have anything to show. And I look back to when Breath of the Wild was originally announced and leading up to release, we didn't know much about Breath of the Wild. We had a similar trailer to this where it was story and incredible music and kind of gameplay teases, but we didn't know that much until the game actually came out and people got their hands on it. So now, after this incredible trailer, I'm seeing a lot of people online going, okay, I was wrong. Maybe I was a little hasty leading up to this. And yeah, man, I'm hyped.
Yeah. Well, you say what you will about Zelda games' ups and downs over the years. I think we can all agree that Nintendo doesn't put out a Zelda game unless it meets a certain level of quality.
Absolutely.
And they certainly seem to be doing that this time as well. Lots of new stuff. It's interesting that even when this game was first mentioned by Nintendo, it was described as a sequel to Breath of the Wild, not another installment in the storied Legend of Zelda franchise. It was a sequel to Breath of the Wild. And that's very much what it seems to be. And in the way that sequels do, it seems to have a whole bunch of new bells and whistles added to a tried and true template. And so are there any particular whistles and bells that strike your fancy, Danny? What is it about this trailer that makes you so excited? Is it stirs those old Zelda things, or is it the new stuff?
It's a little bit of both, because in Breath of the Wild, you had your main mechanics such as Magnesis and Cryosis, like where you can turn things into ice and stuff. And as we saw in the gameplay reveal a few weeks ago, we have new abilities like fusing things together and making giant mechs that kind of look like kaiju. Like, it's wild. So all of that is very exciting. But I think what I'm finding really exciting about Tears of the Kingdom overall is that there were some, even just diehard Zelda fans like myself, as much as we loved Breath of the Wild, there were some rough edges that I think, since Nintendo took such a big swing with Breath of the Wild, they kind of faltered here and there. The biggest one that I've seen, and I'm part of this camp, is Breath of the Wild didn't really have traditional dungeons, nothing where you'd be like, this is the fire temple, right? And it's all fire, enemies throughout. It was those, those beasts that you went through, and that was amazing, but it wasn't exactly what traditional Zelda fans were waiting for. And they didn't necessarily say in this trailer, hey, there's going to be dungeons. But if you watch that trailer, there are, I would say, at least a half a dozen shots where I can pause and go, guys, that's a dungeon. Like, come on, that is a dungeon. So I think they gave us the right amount of saying, hey, you can probably suss out what's going to happen here, but without actually explaining it to us in full force.
I hope you're right. I think that would be, that's something I definitely missed about Breath of the Wild, as is those, it's such a joy to go through a classic Legend of Zelda dungeon. And those beasts were cool, but I did miss that, you know, that notion of puzzle solving. And I mean, there's lots of puzzles in Breath of the Wild, obviously, but that, just that notion of being in this self-contained place that feels like a puzzle box, and finishing it. And yes, you said, you know, delivered on a silver platter to gamers. And I think it's more the ordered nature of that. You go to this temple, then you go to that temple.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe that is simplistic, and maybe it's of a bygone era, but it there's something joyous about that to me as well. Christian, did you have a chance to see the new Tears of the Kingdom? Are you on board? I mean, we talked about the last presentation with showing, you know, some of the really cool new mechanics that the game will offer as far as getting Link to manipulate all the stuff in the world. And it really feels like they're blowing the doors off as far as letting you have those emergent gameplay moments, building things and figuring out ways that the developers perhaps didn't even anticipate to interact with the world. But did this trailer add more flavor, or are you already on board?
Well, I think if you go back and listen, like, over the years of this show, Jeff, one thing our audience will know that is that I demand two things from my Zelda games. One, Ganon needs to be hot.
Yes, like, you always say that.
The best Zelda games are hot Ganon. Two, needs to be voiced by a popular DM. Like, there are just, I have basic levels of what I need for my Zelda games. Yeah. Like, I need hot bod, hot voice. And I feel
these
like
these are textbook examples.
Thank you.
You were so joking frustrated aside, in the NES era when there literally was no voice for Ganon.
But pretty hot pixels.
Still hot. Pixely.
Still, yeah, pixels still hot. Good. Still hot pixels. Still hot pixels. I agree with Danny that I think that this is very much Nintendo's marketing and what it has been for the franchise, kind of this iteration of it. And I think they know what their pre-order numbers are. Folks are chomping at the bit for this game. It's going to be huge. And I think they've shown this story trailer, I think, set a lot of things up, but didn't answer everything, which I appreciate. I mean, we've talked about with cinema how you see a trailer and it's like, oh, that's the opening, that's the middle, oh, and that's the final. Okay, well, I've seen what I need to know. And I think Nintendo usually does a really good job showing some of the cool, epic moments, the awesome soundtrack and score. And then in this trailer, showing some of that, like the story beats, like you mentioned, this is a sequel. And I think showing some of that and what it means to be a sequel without answering all of the questions is a really exciting way to do it. This in no way turned down the hype for Tears of the Kingdom, in my opinion.
Turned down for what?
Hot Ganon, yeah. I guess. That's what I'm turning down for.
I genuinely just wish I had a better console to play it on. But, you know, that's a different story.
That much I agree on. I love Zelda and I love my Switch, but there's a small part of me that's jumping away from, like, I was just playing Resident Evil and we'll get to it in 60 frames. And I'm like, the 30. I'm all right. I could do it.
I wish Nintendo was on board with everybody else and was like, yeah, it's on our console and also PC. And then I'd be like, yay.
Well, Jeff, you just have to wait another year when the Switch Pro comes out, and then you'll replay Tears of the Kingdom in.
No, what's going to happen is it won't even be a year. It's going to be like Zelda will come out, and then they'll right on the heels of that, they'll be like, this fall. And I'll be like, curse you.
We know you just beat the game. Beat it again.
Yeah.
Play the version that we're putting out.
New game plus.
And pay us $70 again.
It's marginally better. It's like, marginal. Like, I love marginal improvements. Anyway, Danny, you fit right in on the show because you also mentioned a second story in your story of the week. And that is the state of play that we got, focusing entirely on Final Fantasy 16 this week. Sony State of Play, 20 minutes of gameplay about Final Fantasy 16. You've you've mentioned your love of the Zelda franchise. How do you feel about the Final Fantasy franchise? Is it up there for you as well?
You know, something I say on Good Gamers Club all the time is that no matter what type of gamer you are, if you like easy mode, if you like hard mode, if you've never played a series, I don't care what, you're welcome here. And that is somewhat self-serving because I have like no attachment to Final Fantasy.
Oh, interesting.
When I was growing up, I was a Nintendo household. I ended up getting an Xbox in my teen years. I didn't own a PlayStation until my mid-20s. Older games were on SNES. I was too young for it, though. So I've never really gotten into the Final Fantasy series until recently. And we'll get to it later, but I've been enjoying Final Fantasy VII Remake. So I've been cautiously like, you know what? Maybe there's something to this whole Final Fantasy series that people keep talking about.
It is funny how Final Fantasy became synonymous with PlayStation because it was always a Nintendo franchise when I was growing up, you know, when I was little.
Yeah.
Anyway, and maybe not that little.
So all of that just to say, 16, I'm here, man. I'm hyped for this. This looks like my type of game. And coming from someone that's never really been into the series before, I watched that and I went, all right, take my money. Let's go. June, I'm ready.
This 20-minute footage really confirms what all of the early hands-on that we got just a few weeks ago from folks saying, hey, this is a full-on action RPG in a way that Final Fantasy has never been. And the voiceover in this 20-minute gameplay demonstration confirms that, explicitly says it. In fact, boy, I was shocked. In the first couple of minutes, it literally says, we liken this Final Fantasy to a high-speed roller coaster ride. And I thought to myself, you could say a lot of things about the Final Fantasy franchise, but I wouldn't ever have described it that way. That feels like a real divergence from what it is. You would often get many, many hours of slow grinding to get to 2.5 minutes of exciting cutscene. That was Final Fantasy, you know.
More like, let's say, a dark ride, like in Disney's Fantasyland, where you're slowly moving on a flat surface. You're getting the story. It's all there, but maybe it's not thrilling.
Yeah, you can tell me exactly. This is, if it does feel like it's a small world, if at the end of, periodically, and it's a small world, you got really cool action sequence. But no, yeah, now they really are showing this off as, you know, it gave me Witcher vibes, Witcher 3 vibes. Lots of wandering, you know, third person camera wandering behind a assorted guy with a doggy through these cool environments and then big action set pieces. I mean, it's a real change for Final Fantasy. And for my money, I don't want to be Mr. Naysayer, but for my money, I think rubs away some of the specialness of Final Fantasy because I think it is now conforming to what every other role-playing game that comes out is. Tell me why I'm wrong. Maybe you guys disagree. Christian, what did you think of this 20 minutes of Final Fantasy 16?
Well, if people that have listened to this show for over the years know, there's always two things I demand of my Final Fantasy games.
Super hot swords that are really oversized.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Or and regular size.
Voiced by.
But hot. But the swords voiced by voice actors from the live action version of Beauty and the Beast. So I think these trailers and Breath of the Wild and Final Fantasy, like here we have these two storied franchises, you know, coming out with new iterations for all intents and purposes, relatively close to each other, very close to each other. I think there are potential lessons for both, having, you know, not played either yet, but Final Fantasy has been a franchise that is constantly reevaluating what it is, whether narratively, setting, and then playing with different mechanics. This feels like the biggest jump in many ways, but also looking back at Final Fantasy VII Remake and some of the other projects that have come out, I feel like you kind of seen them dipping their toes into these waters. And I think, you know, you look at what Nintendo did with Breath of the Wild and the success of going something totally different with a storied franchise can have. And you look at Final Fantasy games over the last few years and kind of the, not necessarily even just sales numbers, but perhaps cultural relevancy. They didn't seem to be carrying the same weight that they used to. And so I think when you look across the way and you're like, oh, they did something radically different, it worked. these other types of action games are selling really well and they're working. Those RPGs are doing really well and kind of taking the genre forward. Like, what can we do? I think this seems like a really exciting step for Final Fantasy 16. And I think the best thing I can say about Final Fantasy 16 is that if it doesn't work, 17 can be totally different. And that says nothing about the franchise. Yeah. You know, like,
it's always, it's ever thus.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it can be a deck builder.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, right. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I want the game to be great. I do. I want the big game to be great. Danny, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I find it interesting, just given both of your perspectives, and I guess, like, I'm the odd duck out here, having not been a fan previously, is they're being pretty explicit in saying, like, in the presentation, they said, if you've never played a game before, that's fine. I think when you see series that have numbers as high as 16, like, even Zelda, it's like, there's so many Zelda games if you look at the timeline and stuff. I kind of got intimidated after a while. I'm like, all right, well, I heard 7's really good. And then it's like, oh, well, now there's 10, now there's 12 and 14 and so on. They're being pretty straightforward and saying, hey, look, none of that matters. Like, sure, you can go back and play those games. But if you want to come in, you know, prospective buyer with money in your wallet, if you want to come play this game, we're here for you. On top of that, something that I'm usually a big advocate for, they're also saying, hey, do you not really like action games? Do you like just want to like experience the Game of Thrones style story? They basically said there's gameplay mechanics that will just kind of do the fighting for you. You'll auto dodge, you'll auto attack, and you'll discover more items that will help you do that. It's clear, for better or worse, that they are going for a blue ocean strategy of like, hey, we need more people to come in and start getting into this series.
Yeah.
But I think likewise, they put 16 on it to let people know we're taking this seriously. This isn't Final Fantasy : action game, you know, this is right. Mm-hmm. They're taking it seriously, not putting the weight behind it.
Offshoot, yeah, not a side yeah. series, yeah. Yes, and I think in the same way we just talked about Nintendo's approach to Legend of Zelda, you know, Square Enix doesn't put out a numbered Final Fantasy game unless they really feel like it is worthy of that moniker. It is a storied franchise. So in that sense, I think it will be a high-quality release. My personal anticipation level is pretty low, but I've never been the hugest Final Fantasy fan. I've enjoyed many of them. But as the last few iterations have sort of weaned themselves into this place away from what they once were, I've gotten less and less excited about them. And honestly, I mean, I hate to be so negative about what I saw, but one of the lines in the trailer was, or the gameplay presentation was, you know, we're pushing the PlayStation 5 to its limits, which is like, doesn't seem that way by what I'm seeing. It didn't seem particularly mm-hmm. impressive looking, or it didn't seem like it was doing, if it looked like big empty areas for the most part. And I don't know.
There were lots of particles, Jeff, though.
There were particles. Yeah.
I think that when they said that, because I clocked that same thing and I was like, oh, okay, this must look really incredible. And usually in most of the big action scenes, I was like, wow, that's a lot of space dust or something.
Fair enough.
That's popping on screen.
If you're down for the space dust, you're going to deliver.
Right.
We'll see. I'm sure that game will be huge as well. And maybe I'll eat my words and be loving it when it comes out. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, speaking of games coming out, Jeff, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. This is our semi-annual, quarterly, every few week check in on Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, which has yeah. yet been delayed. We've known. Well, I guess we've rumored. We've heard. It is now confirmed, and confirmed with a date that is not
Jeff
this year.
Was right.
Sorry.
I was trying to really hover in your finger over that button.
Fit that in, and then Christian kept having big pauses, and I was like, well, now's the time.
As you were saying, Christian, delayed.
As you were saying, every game is delayed. Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. We had their big 20-minute gameplay reveal not too long ago. That was supposed to be their trumpeting announcement that the game was coming, and it landed like a big lead balloon, kind of like my
and
kind of like my little sound drop there.
And before that, they had the first delay, like, this is really our date. Like, we mean it this time, jerks. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. Scratched into the bat. It's happening. And now we're getting this new date, February 2nd, 2024, which is a long time, but not take yeah, the
not video game
back.
Long time.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. Like, not fix what was wrong with it, I think, time.
Yeah. Is this giving you Halo Infinite vibes?
I mean, the development doesn't seem to have been that troubled, per se, in terms of, like, I mean, I know we did have the head of the studio, some high-ranking studio heads leave. But to me, if anything, this seems like games take so long to make that if you take a bet on a style of game that seems like the chase the trend or money thing and it ends up not working, that can be problematic. And that's what this is looking like to me. But like you in Final Fantasy, Jeff, I hope I'm wrong. And now I hope that 2024 Suicide Squad is my game of the year.
Want to take any bets as to whether it comes out on February 2nd, 2024?
No.
It feels like a weird, I mean, I guess February is the new whatever. It doesn't matter. Video games can come out anytime, anytime now.
Right.
And I, it, you know, that is a, it has to come out before Q3 or whatever the Q is that starts in March. but boy, that doesn't give, it gives me the uh-oh feeling. And you're right that it's a year, basically, a little less than a year, obviously. But, what do you do between now and then to change that game? If what's wrong with it, I mean, Halo Infinite had a similar pathway, right? It was shown. Everybody went, we kind of don't like that. And they went, okay, year delay. But theirs was, you know, it just doesn't look like a showcase for the console. It doesn't look pretty enough. Give it a better coat of paint. I don't think anybody was talking about the visuals. And it feels to me, as somebody that has not participated in game development, so maybe I don't know anything, but it doesn't feel to me like a graphical upgrade is a lot easier to do in a year than a, this game plays not the way we were hoping it does. But, so
yeah, the fundamental gameplay loop, I don't think is changing. I think we're still going to be shooting big purple orbs, like across giant robots. Like, I think that's still going to be the core conceit of it. And it's such a bummer because I feel like when this game first got announced, how many years ago? 6 years ago? Like, it feels like that, like ages ago. When you tell me on paper, hey, you know the Arkham games? Like, you love those games? Oh, yeah, Rocksteady, they're great. They're making a new game, and it's Suicide Squad. Whoa, what? That's crazy. I was so hyped. And then subsequently, each delay, it's like, taking me down a peg, taking me down a peg, taking me down a peg. This one kind of brought me up half a peg, I guess. Like, it's not great because, like you said, it's not like the game's going to change. But at the same time, there's, you know, sometimes we've got this problem in current day gaming where I've only got so much time in the day and there's just a lot to do. One might say there's... Exactly. Some might say there's too many games. So when there's a delay, I don't really complain that much. I'm like, all right, fine, delay it. I've got enough going on with me anyway. So this almost like balances out to a neutral, like, fine, push it, see, do what you can do. But I don't, my hype levels are not increasing for it by any stretch.
Yes. I mean, obviously there's already tons of stuff to play this year. I'm not going to be worried about that. And it was set to be released right in the thick of some crazy releases. I'm going to go on the record and say, I think this game is not going to come out and be the same game they showed. At least they're not going to market it that way. I think the next time we hear about this game, next time we see it in 20, you know, at end of this year or early next year, when they next are start to flex about it, I think we're going to see lots of superheroes and lots of big superhero-y battles that don't have anything to do with you know, gelatinous purple sacks that we're shooting. even if that's still in the game, I don't think they're going to be showing it or promoting it. And I think they're going to really focus on making this game feel like a heroic, be in the shoes of a superhero against other superheroes thing. And I also predict that February 2nd is not the final release date for this game. Maybe they have some constraints. Maybe they have some constraints about getting it out before the quarter ends. But I suspect this game will be delayed yet again.
Jeff coming off the Filmcast Summer Wager with like just wanting to put new predictions into the world. It's not even the end of the year. You're just ready, you know, for our show. Yeah. You're coming in early and hot. Love it.
Coming in hot. What do you think, Christian? You think this game's coming out on February 2nd?
Yes, I do.
I'm going to
pushed into a corner. I will say yes, only because so long, and I think WB is looking to get this game out now. Like we've given you, this is our third official date. We need to get this thing off the books. We need to get it out. So yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Originally set to release in 2022.
Did they say if there's a battle pass for it already?
Well, there was all that discussion of how that was going to work, and I don't think any of it was official, and I suspect all that's
going to be.
You know, they didn't talk about how it was going to be, you know, have an always on requirement even when you were playing single player. I think all of that's going to change.
That stuff seems like the things that they could tweak, because judging off that last showcase back in what, February or so, the majority of the you know, hate that came from it was from like a microtransactions battle pass, like, oh, there's cosmetics and I'm gonna have to buy this and that. So I'm not saying they're gonna get rid of that. I mean, the game seems to revolve around it, but that does seem like something that maybe they could finesse and, like you said, kind of put under the rug and just be like, all right, well, we're not gonna be as overt about it as we had originally planned.
Yeah, so one of those games that's gonna fit in that old you know, that storied list with alongside Cyberpunk and Halo Infinite and all these games that have just had, you know, so highly anticipated and then just languish in development hell. I hope the story turns out a positive one. This is a game we've been really excited about for quite a long time. So, you know, you want these games to come out and be great, but you know, I don't know.
Crossing fingers and
indeed,
toes.
Indeed. There's a lot of really interesting stories this week. I think I'm going to go with one that was submitted to us via email at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. As I mention every week, Tyler sent this in, and it's fascinating to me. This kind of is very similar to something I did predict in our predictions episode, Christian, if you notice.
I predict that Tyler will send us an email middle of April.
No, this is a story about Google and Stanford teaming up to use ChatGPT to power video game characters. And this is a fascinating thing. I think this is inevitable, the inevitable future that we're all heading for. And I think it's pretty exciting in the sense that one of the things, you know, since time immemorial, as far as I remember in video games, everybody was like, yeah, it's nice when you make the graphics prettier, but can't somebody make the characters more interesting, more intelligent, smarter, make that AI improve? And then every generation, it's like, oh, look, everything's shinier and prettier. And people are like, well, but they still haven't made the AI of the NPCs, the enemies, and all that stuff. Nobody's made them smarter. Well, we might be on the verge of that actually happening for once. And it sounds like this experiment that Stanford participated in with Google yielded some fascinating results, because they basically created what they described as a game sort of like The Sims, where each of the little characters in the game, little NPCs in the game, were fed AI from ChatGPT based on a huge system of you know, the internet, basically the data set. And they started behaving like people. They had, it said, quote, generative agents woke up, cooked breakfast, headed to work. Artists painted while authors wrote. They formed opinions, noticed each other, initiated conversations. They remembered and reflected on days past as they planned the next day. That sounds pretty crazy and pretty cool. Here's another quote. To enable generative agents, we describe an architecture that extends a large language model to store a complete record of the agent's experiences using natural language, synthesize those memories over time into higher level reflections, and retrieve them to dynamically plan behavior. So basically, the craziest part about this to me is that it's using natural language. It's not, this isn't, they're not generating, you know, computer code. They're generating a series of inner monologues for these characters. And the characters then think back on those, you know, source those inner monologues from previous days to make their future interactions more interesting. So if you can imagine, this isn't how it works now, but it leads me to imagine a game where I walk up to an NPC in a video game world, have a conversation with them, and then much later I interact with them again, and they not only remember what I said to them the first time we interacted, but they've heard things from other characters that I've interacted. It's a completely dynamic way of interacting with the world. It's not pre-programmed. It's not static.
It's a Telltale game times a million, right? Instead of like, Jeff will remember that. And then it's like, Jeff will remember that. And this is what Tina told Jeff. And P.S., Jeff knows you're lying because he talked to Mark. And boy, is Mark angry.
Yeah. So they started all this with inputting a single paragraph description that explained to the AI what the character was all about. Given occupations, relationships with other characters, even memories. In a single paragraph. And then from there, ChatGPT took over the decision making with respect to their backstory, and a surprisingly interesting community emerged. Talk about an ant farm, right? And talk about the Sims. Talk about the Sims. Yeah. They get hungry, they get mad. That's about it. If you had a little world in there of people, this is happening now. What's holding it back? Well, it turns out it's extraordinarily expensive to do this on a game level. Extraordinarily, it's expensive. Every ChatGPT ask is very expensive. They say searching with a natural language model like this compared to just a regular Google search is a 100x cost increase.
Oof.
So I don't think we're going to see, games do this in the super short term, although I did predict it. it just may be too cost prohibitive, but that's going to change. As with everything technology related, costs come down. And at a certain point, we're just going to have little worlds that we'll go into that will feel ridiculously sophisticated. I want to know, Danny, are you down for that or does it creep you out?
I'm of two minds of it. It definitely creeps me out. It creeps me out not only in like the iRobot type of way where it's like, wow, you said ant farm and there's like, oh wait, so there's a community? Does that community have like opinions on like real things? And so it definitely creeps me out in that way. But my bigger flag that I kind of just feel a little irksome about is so we talk about these NPCs that exist and they get programmed to do X or Y. Like I think of specifically like Horizon Forbidden West, like they promoted a ton leading up to that game. Like, hey, each village, people will have jobs and they'll be, taking out water and they'll be doing this and playing games and drinking with each other. And that didn't just happen. They had to pay people. There were people that have careers and jobs that are doing that and programming all of those things. So when I look at AI and all this stuff, it is very, there's an optimism about it where I go, the creativity that people are using with it is just incredible. The technology itself is incredible. But sometimes I feel like, man, we're moving fast. We're moving real fast with this and we're not pausing to consider, well, what are the implications?
Oh, there's no pausing.
So
there's no pausing.
No, OpenAI doesn't support it actually.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
So the cost thing kind of quells my fears a little bit because I go, okay, well, if it truly is 100 times more expensive to do this, thankfully video games are already really expensive to make. So I don't see that, like you said, happening anytime soon. So maybe that gives everyone time to like pause and go, all right, well, what do we do with these people? Like maybe these people that are in those careers can figure out how to manipulate the AI instead of having to manually program it. So there's maybe time to do it, but from a pure gameplay perspective, it sounds pretty dope.
What do you think, Christian? Are you ready to log into a game where everyone has an opinion about you?
Well, about the version
of
me.
That's the internet.
Yeah, it's the version of me that exists in that game. Now, it would be creepy as if, like, oh, God. This isn't far either, right? The idea – so I'm going to back up a little bit. The idea that we have now of the perceived listening and then actual data tracking that happens where you're like, I was just thinking about shoes the other day and I said to my friend, I want to get new shoes. And then I go online and it's like, you should check out these new shoes. And I'm like, wow. Now if you have that
– I'll message you tomorrow when I get shoe ads in my, in my feeds.
Hold on. Hold on. I got to make sure, Danny. Sneaker shoe, Nike, Reebok, Adidas. Now you're good.
Boom.
But like layering that now on top of this AI type thing where it's not even necessarily my character in game, but they come at me and they're like, bring my real world life into it somehow, where it's like, hey, Spartacus, we're going to go on this adventure. Also, you need more dog poop bags. And I'm like, what?
yeah,
it's like, oh, it's all colliding. But by then I will have my own AI playing one of those play to earn games. Like, look, this is the future. I'll have an AI that's farming in a NFT Web3 game, right? Then it's mining me Bitcoin. That's making me money that I can then fuel into pay the AI to write the character in the next game that then comes out. And I still feel depressed. But between those characters, there's something – I think something amazing will come out of this, but it is – parts of it feel very much like a Black Mirror episode that I don't know how it ends yet.
I obviously have expressed a lot of concerns about this technology. One place I'm not super concerned about it is in the context of gaming. For me, I see huge upside for gaming. It's all of the other stuff that we're going to get that I'm worried about.
It's minor details,
Yeah, it's the, you know, it's the pan-economic influence, you know, changes that will just crush every aspect of modern human life. But gaming is going to be sick.
We're eating.
It's going to be sick. I think, you know, what we all need, we're all going to need that universal basic income to be, just be able to interact in our game worlds all day long, because the game worlds are going to be wild. I mean, here's what I mean. All joking aside, I do think with constraints, and you know how humans are super good at constraints, but with...
You should see me when it comes to a dessert platter, talking about putting constraint on things.
You know. Don't touch it. Because it just goes right in your mouth. You know, no fingers involved. just inhale. No. I mean, you know, the thing you described, Christian, is possible now. And yes, there are a lot of really smarmy, gross, manipulative games that are trying to separate you from your money. But there's also a lot of really great games that would never in a million years have that kind of crass, you know, marketing or, you know, in-game... product placement's what I was looking for. So just because it's possible, there will be things that do that. The best of them won't. The best of them will simply be trying to create as interesting and cool a virtual world to participate in as possible. So for me, I envision the best video games having characters that are dynamic and interesting and actually react to things and don't have any canned, you know. And by constraints, I mean not just constraining ourselves against the temptations of capitalism gone wild. I mean constraining the ability of the AI within the context of the game to do everything. So if you can build a character in a game that doesn't just expand untethered, that it really is like I'm creating Aloy in this game, you know? I'm treating a well-rounded, interesting hero woman who you're going to meet and you maybe can team up with and fight the bad guys. And around the campfire, you can have really interesting conversations that are all contextually accurate. She's not going to bring up products to buy in the real world. She's not going to bring up politics. She's not going to tell you to murder your family. you know, as an agent of the, you know, robot takeover. But she's literally going to have like this cool ability to be infinitely interesting all the time. And if all the characters in the world, you walk into a city, a fantasy city, and every character has a life and desires and wants, and that sounds fascinating to me from somebody that's always been invested in virtual worlds. If you can create that and have it not be a bottomless pit of nonsense, have it actually be structured in some way, have human beings craft it in some way where things do matter and there is a reason to be there and a reason to do the thing and the quest and the storyline and all that stuff. But also everyone is rich and interesting and there isn't just six different dialogue options and after that they repeat themselves. I think that's a win. Right. I think that's amazing for gaming.
Yeah, because you even talked earlier about like the broader, you know, macroeconomic situations that we've got here. That's scary from like an automation point of view. Like, hey, are we going to automate every job that exists? But there are some things that are worth automating in games. And ultimately, I think if it's viewed as a tool that artists and creators can use and, you know, fold and or not fold a mold and shape and like use the best way they can to deliver that experience, that would be ideal compared to like, hey, we made an AI and then that AI made another AI and that AI is making a game and it's all just completely one contained thing. That's scary. And hopefully, like you said, there's like guardrails that they're putting in place to like make sure that doesn't happen, because if it is truly just, hey, I don't know, like Final Fantasy 16, like if that game coming out, they needed to like, hey, we need to like make a bunch of trees and we need to make a bunch of, you know, NPCs and whatever. Go for it. That sounds really exciting.
Hey, Jeff.
Yo.
Do you like this armor? It's epic. It's epic. There's only... Here's the quest. Listen closely.
Want that.
Yeah, you want it?
Yeah, I
want that. Kill your neighbor.
Like, in the game?
Yes. Also in the game. Sure. But doesn't Roger Willstone live at 2224 Eastview Trail Creek? What?
I mean, that's going to be the challenge of all this stuff is how do you put those constraints on? How do you, when you have a system of AI that teaches itself, you know, how do you constrain it into just being this little character in this game world? And I'm really curious to see what this Stanford study, you know, if it goes far enough, when, here's an anecdote from the article that Tyler sent us. It says agents took on their given lives and could retrieve memories as if they were real, interacting with each other in full character. The researchers simulated events such as a Valentine's Day party, and the agents reacted accordingly by inviting others to the party anonymously and asking each other out on dates. When the party happened, they coordinated to turn up together.
Christian, the AI is not going to tell us to murder our neighbor. They're going to tell us to give a Valentine to our neighbor.
No. The humans did that part, and the AI responded appropriately because this was the AI's first Valentine's Day. When Stanford ran that same experiment again, half of those characters said, "I'm not participating in this Hallmark holiday," and sat it out. And they did it the third time, and one of the characters said, "I feel unloved by all of the other characters in here," and it started forming a militia. When they did it the fourth time.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I'm trying to see at least a little silver lining in this inevitable future we're marching into at a breakneck pace.
Dear AI, like, who's listening to this podcast, I too am looking for – I also am on your side.
I am optimistic.
It's like a fast-paced roller coaster ride reality in 2023.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of which, let us talk about the games that we have been playing this week. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace! Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for building your brand and growing your business online. Stand out with a beautiful website. Engage with your audience and sell anything, your products, content you create, even your time. I've been using Squarespace for Over a decade, JeffCanada.com was built on Squarespace. I love it. I love Squarespace. It's so easy to make a website. But also, you got all of these cool brand building tools, these cool ways to sell things, to monetize. You can monetize your content, your expertise in a way that fits with your brand. You got those member areas on the new Squarespace. You can unlock a new revenue stream for your business and free up time in your schedule by selling access to gated content like videos and online courses and newsletters. You can make the videos in Squarespace's Video Studio app right there. They got everything you need to make and share engaging videos that tell your story, grow your audience, drive sales. The online stores are so easy. You can sell digital products, physical products, everything you need. It's just a click away. Drag it into your website. All of a sudden, you've got an online store. You've got simultaneous posting where Squarespace can authenticate your social profiles, letting you auto-post your content to Facebook and Twitter or your personal brand pages or Tumblr. All the post entries and images are optimized and tagged properly. It's so simple. They've got analytics to help you grow your business. Check it out. You've never seen anything like this. It's really the easiest way to do everything regarding a website. Go to squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me for a free trial. It's completely free. You can use the tools, build your website, and then when you're ready to launch it, you can use our offer code Jeff Sent Me, JeffSentme, all one word. All one. It's my way of saying one word. All one. Jeff Sent Me saves you 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Again, squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me for a free trial. And the promo code Jeff Sent Me for saving 10% off. Thanks, Squarespace, for supporting the show. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Danny, what games have you been playing this week?
Well, I have a tale of two remakes. Mm. Two remakes that are very different for me. The first is Resident Evil 4 Remake, as I'm sure you could probably expect if you're out there as a gamer. Like, I feel it's on every stream. If I'm scrolling TikTok, everyone's talking about RE4 because, hey, guys, turns out Resident Evil 4 is a good video game.
Yeah.
It was 20 years ago and it still is today. Like, I played it. As I said, I was a Nintendo household and I had my GameCube and I must have been 15 when that game came out.
Same age.
Yeah, me too. So 15. Yeah. Definitely.
I think it might have been 10 if I'm thinking about it.
Probably.
I'm like,
I don't even remember it. It's so young.
Yeah. When it came out 20 years ago, Hat wasn't born. Anyway, go ahead, Danny. Sorry for interrupting.
amongst friends. So yeah, I didn't at the time, I just wasn't into horror movies or games, but there was something about it where all my friends were talking about, oh man, this is revolutionary. The controls are wild. I was addicted to that game. I fell in love with it. It kind of got me into horror movies and into the horror genre. So when they announced this remake, I was like, bet, like I'm there, take my money. I don't even show me a frame of footage. And I am so happy to report that, man, they nailed this. With the exception of maybe the rain effect that I know a lot of people have bemoaned, I have had such a good time with this game. I recently beat it, so I made it the whole way through, and now I'm playing a bit of Mercenaries, and it's great. It does that great remake thing that I know people say all the time, where I went back to YouTube, and I started watching footage of the original, and I went, oh, it really is that big. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's not how I remember it, but I feel like the game is how I remember things. But I was way wrong.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. I think, you know, Halo, the Halo remaster really nailed it with that button that lets you flop back and forth. I feel like that should be a requirement for the remakes. Just maybe not through the whole game, just a few moments where they're just like, hey, real quick. We want to remind you what this game used to look like. Yeah, we did a lot of work.
Yeah, there should be like a room.
Appreciate our work.
Like the first house you go into in RE4, there's like an old like GameCube, and you can play the, you know what I mean? Because like the control, they changed so much, so it's like, oh
yeah,
and just pulled up a side by side, and then Leon looks, you know, does it. Wow.
The zombie comes and grabs you and holds your neck and forces you to look at a CRT television. Look at it. 480i is what we have.
But it's in jumbled Spanish, so half the people playing don't even know what they're saying, even though they are saying, you know, the right words. But That's funny.
It's like a boomer or like millennial, whatever, like aging generation, the feature where it's like, hey, you kids don't know how good you got when we were playing it.
Yeah. It's just literally there's the same NPC in every remake is like, in my day.
What are you buying? No. What are you selling? This is what the game used to look like. And you're like, oh, no, the merchant.
It says press X to skip. And then you try. And he's like, in my day, we couldn't skip cutscenes, kid. Nice try.
We were loading the textures.
We had to swap discs. Do you understand? Anyway, I'm glad you're enjoying RE4 Remake. You said there's a tale of two remakes, however.
Yes. So Resident Evil 4 Remake, I've got a lot of nostalgia for. I love that game. I was really hyped for this new one. As I mentioned earlier, I have been getting into the Final Fantasy series as the hype train for 16 has been rolled out by the PR teams. I went, you know what? All right. I've listened to it for years and years. Let me get into this series. And people were really hyped about that Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I went, you know what? We are right before Horizon and Jedi and Tears of the Kingdom. And I went, I've got a few weeks. Let me just get into Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I'm not sure if all the other games are like this, but if they are, I'm now a new Final Fantasy fan. This game is fantastic.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of updates and changes made to the remake for sure. So if you go back to the franchise proper, I don't know if you'll be quite as pleased, but it certainly is the spirit of those old games in a lot of ways. But yeah, remake's very good.
So I started doing research because I'm like, well, hold on. Have I been missing out on this for this long? So I went to YouTube and I went around. I'm like, obviously it didn't look like this back then. So yeah, obviously turn-based compared to real time. If you're listening at home and you don't know, the original game, completely turn-based, kind of an isometric view, like very simple graphics. This is a AAA budget, giant bombastic thing. And I hate admitting this sometimes. I struggle with turn-based strategy games. When I was a kid, I loved Pokemon, Advance Wars I loved. Like, all those old games I was a huge fan of. But what I realized was, when I was a child, turns out I had a lot of free time. Like, a lot of free time. And I have a job, and I'm married, and a social life. So, when I sit down to play games, I'm very impatient. I want to get into things very quickly. I want to get to the action. Let's go. So, the remake, I think, has balanced. It almost feels turn-based in that it's, in all reality, you attack, and then while you're running around, you're kind of waiting for that moment. Ooh, do I block now? Do I dodge now? It is somewhat turn-based, but in all reality, you are moving in real time. You're picking spells. You slow down time to, you know, heal a team member or whatever. And it's really, really cool. So I know that there's, like we talked about earlier, so many of the games can vary so frequently. I don't know how long. I just got past, to not spoil people, past the second reactor. Mm-hmm. So I just met Aerith. That's probably the best way to put it. I'm with Aerith right now. And I'm having a blast. This game's great. I think the tone can be a little jarring for me compared to other games that I've played. It's a little, I do not mean this disparagingly, it's a little anime, and I love anime, but like when I started playing, I went, oh, okay. I just have to rearrange my thinking of how this is going to go. And I think the craziest thing for me is the story itself. I'm like, oh, so they wrote this in 2022, right? Like, there's eco-terrorists that are like, hey, we need to protect the planet because, like, turns out, like, capitalism is destroying the Earth and so on. I'm like, wow, they did that in 97? Oh, all right. This is really relevant.
Just shows you how
if
long
only
we
had seen the
buckets.
Warnings. Yeah.
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 How long it's been where it's like, anyway, it'll be interesting to see. I think there's going to be a lot of folks for whom the Final Fantasy franchise started with Remake and will go right to 16. Like, I know the MMO is 14 is very popular as well, but I feel like there are going to be a lot of folks like you that, you know, their first really playing of a Final Fantasy game was 7 Remake, and then they'll go into 16. And I think maybe that's why you're seeing the style continue that direction. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I just mourn the kind of game that I enjoyed a bit. But
well, if Zelda turned into a kart racer tomorrow, I too would be like, oh man, give me back my RPG.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's Kart Racer level of change, but it is, you know, it's different, and it's, you know,
yeah,
it's the thing, it's different, not in a, this is also unique and interesting. It feels different in a conforming to the norm, which is what feels a little bit of a bummer to me, because we have plenty of games like that. But
well, here's
I could be wrong.
Pro tip, Jeff, what I've been doing at my house, like I love real-time combat in my, I love action games, but because I do miss a little bit of that turn-based, I've started implementing that with my family. So when we talk, you know, if my kids are in a fight, one of them has to wait just in an idle animation.
How does that work?
While the other one, yeah, I mean, it's great so far. So far, so good.
Lots of tutorialization.
Oh my God. We're not even to the fight yet, but we're still...
You know that thing with like a broken Nintendo Switch controller where the character will just run to the left? Yeah, that's what my kids have.
They just run.
They don't have idle animation so much as just going nonstop.
You should contact Nintendo about that.
You know,
in Europe, they have to fix it. Yeah, for drift. Yeah. My kids have drift.
My kids have mad drift, unfortunately. Anyway, what else is on your playlist there, Danny?
The other one that I feel like this game is going to take me a long time to finish, but in the best ways possible, is Chia, the little indie title that hit PlayStation Plus, which is, I always love to see this when PlayStation Plus is like competing with Game Pass and like day and date, we're going to put it on the service. If you're unfamiliar at home, it is a game based on or inspired by a real place, New Caledonia, where the developers are from. And if I had to like put this into a tweet, Chia is vibes the video game. Like, it is just pure good feel vibes. So, I mean, look at the two games I just referenced. Resident Evil 4, not a vibey game. Final Fantasy 7, not a vibey game. My wife was watching me play Resident Evil last night, and she goes, "Your eyes were so wide open during that sequence," because I was so stressed. Chia does not do that, man. You kind of just have a drink, you sit down, and you just hang out in this world. There are, like, objectives and there are collectibles and there are things to do, but I'm finding that I'm just enjoying sailing, or there's this mechanic where you can they call it soul jumping, where you kind of take over a bird and you turn into a bird, or you turn into a snake or a rock or something. I've spent I think an hour earlier today just running around an island having fun. I did a couple of tasks that people occasionally asked me for, but I'm loving how relaxing this game is. And it's a nice break or a change of pace compared to some of the other games that I've been into lately.
This is the one that kind of looks a little bit like Wind Waker, right? It's got that toon cel-shaded look.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There are elements that remind me of Wind Waker, which is my favorite Zelda game. And one of the things that the title card shows up and you're hitting the open seas, and you know, the title card plays music, fanfare, etc. And there's this moment where you're like, oh, this is the moment where I get to kind of steer my little raft throughout the ocean in this big adventurous moment. And what I realized was, hold on, I'm turning left and right. How do I slow down? I don't know what I'm doing here. So what you have to do is you hit square to let go of your rudder. Then you have to walk across your raft to the sail, hit square again, pick up the sail, bring the sail down, change your speed. And then you have to let go again, hit square, and then you have to walk back to your rudder. And it sounds so simple to make you do that compared to just like left and right. But it really changed the way that I was thinking so much more. Like, okay, it is sounds simple to get from point A to point B, maybe like a little meandering river. But no, I'm having to really stop and go, no, slow down so that I can make this quick bank. Okay, now it's a straight ahead. I can bring the sail back up. So there's Wind Waker elements. There's no dungeons or anything you're doing. No hot Ganondorf. Unfortunately, I regret to point that out. But it is very relaxing.
Again, that's called Chia, T-C-H-I-A. And you're playing it on PlayStation, but I think it's on lots of stuff.
It's on PC as well. I think Epic Games.
Coming to Steam soon. Not available, but has been announced for Steam as well.
Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist this week?
I would say, speaking of remakes, but it's not it's not quite a remake, but in ways it feels like a remake. And Jeff, it lets me do that thing of new graphics, old graphics, new graphics, old graphics. And can I just tell you that these new graphics are incredible? I am replaying Cyberpunk 2077. I started a new save from zero because I wanted to relive some of the moments that I had played the first time through. Again, now that Overdrive mode is out. Overdrive mode is a mode that brings path tracing, full ray tracing, to Cyberpunk 2077. In Cyberpunk 2077, if you go back and listen to our episode first on that, we both played it on high-end PCs when it came out. I enjoyed the game for what it was. In many ways, it felt, you know, more action-y and this, that, and the other. It did not feel like what I was expecting it to be. But I had some fun with it, and my PC was able to muscle through most of the problems. And then they introduced different ray tracing modes, this, that, and the other. This Overdrive mode, in correlation with DLSS 3.0, transforms the visual landscape of Cyberpunk 2077 in such a dramatic way that, in my opinion, it is to the level of Halo remake, you know, Halo 1 Combat Evolved, and when it originally released on the first Xbox, of that, oh my gosh, on, oh my gosh, off. And that it is the same game underlying, right? There aren't new animations. It's not Last of Us Part 1 versus Last of Us on PlayStation 3. It's not that. It is just a graphical overhaul. But the graphical overhaul that happens just because of the full ray tracing of lighting in this cyberpunk neon drenched world is phenomenal. Scenes that seemed flat or uninteresting before are moody, and speaking of vibes, just exuding this energy of this seedy underbelly in a way that didn't before. It was either like too much red or too dark, and the diffused light, the NPCs seem more natural in the world in a way that I didn't think just changing the lighting could do. Whereas I think for folks that played it before, the best way I could describe it, some NPC characters almost felt like the thing that you'd click on an old school, like Space Quest style game, you know, like they, they stood are like, oh, that's the door in the cartoon that's going to open, 'cause it's a little different color than all the other doors in this old cartoon. And then paired with DLSS 3, I'm still able to achieve, you know, over 60 frames per second as I'm playing through this game and seeing these landscapes. And if you have a beefy GP and you are able to run this game in overdrive mode, and if you haven't experienced it yet also, I know Cyberpunk is kind of a poster child for Woof development and Woof launch. It's not that game anymore. Like, it's not The Witcher. It will never be that style of RPG that I think Witcher fans were hoping it would be. But in terms of a game that runs and performs and looks outstanding, Overdrive mode is absolutely incredible. It is jaw-dropping. Have you gone back to it, Jeff? Have you toyed around with it at all?
You're making me want to reinstall it, so maybe I have to just check it out. I have been resisting.
Digital Foundry did an excellent video of it too, if you just want to, like, if people don't have the beefy GPs or they just want to see it, like, watch that video on 4K mode, you know, or whatever on YouTube, and you can kind of see some of the differences. I do think it is different to play it and, like, sure, walk around a room in the shadow that it's first person, but the shadow that I cast by being there changes the space. What was it? Your bullets, like your muzzle flash is ray traced.
Wow.
It's what? So you're in this dark, like, it's some of the early levels, especially too, where you can hack your way through. It's like dark, picture a Metal Gear Solid interior, like warehousey style compound. And it's now extra dark because the only light sources are the lights in the world creating the things. And you're coming around corners shooting and your muzzle flash is realistic. Oh, dude.
Christian, do you know if, as a NVIDIA GeForce fan,
yes,
the high tier of that, do you know if it supports this new... Because I don't have a BVGP, but I do have an NVIDIA GeForce subscription.
Great question. I have not. This just launched on the 11th, so I have not tried. That's a great question. I don't know if that tier of I should have emailed NVIDIA and asked, but I have not loaded it up and tried. But I will. I will let you know. It's worth checking.
Report back, because I haven't gotten into the game yet. I've been very patient. I've just waited a very long time and other games took over. So you're tempting me to get into this.
Yeah, I'll check. And I think that's worth people, if they have that, you know, premier tier, the 40 series GeForce Now, it's worth checking if you can go in and turn on overdrive mode. And to a question that's coming in saying, can you only play it with a beefy GP? No, like I also played this on, it has a dedicated Steam Deck mode also, where it doesn't look as pretty, but if you want to take like the story, you can still play it on a lower end card, but overdrive mode.
Yeah. For the full ray tracing, you need a 40 series, right?
And I would not try playing it without, yeah, DLS. If you turn DLSS off, it goes from, you know, like 95 frames per second to 20. I mean, it is staggering.
Yeah.
Like talking of AI, that's something that AI is doing now in games. That isn't character, whatever, but it's rendering frames that didn't exist in the game or couldn't render out at these at this fidelity and making
one,
it look.
A single frame in those 90 per second says kill your neighbor in it.
Yeah, it really Tyler Durden's it, right? You have to pause it and see it just right.
The robots really don't like my neighbor is the thing that I'm learning.
What did they ever do?
I don't know. That's the robots. What else is on your I own Cyberpunk. I got the BVGB. I got to see this for myself. What else is on your playlist, Christian?
MLB The Show 2023. It's on Game Pass. It's on PlayStation. There's a way that you can play this game. It's not stuck on a Sony console anymore if you haven't played it. Specifically, though, so I've talked about MLB, I think kind of going back to whenever Ken Griffey Jr. was on the cover for the, you know, Signature Edition or whatever it was, because, you know, I love Ken Griffey Jr. Who doesn't? MLB The Show 2023, I can't speak to the longevity of some of the franchise mode stuff. People that listen to the show know that that's not, I'm not bringing my rookie up. I'm not playing through the show. I like to play through the season as the team, as the roster, as it exists, then make some tweaks along the way. But that, you know, that's kind of what brings me to the game each year, not the managerial stuff where I'm doing the nitty gritty of the front office and trying to moneyball my way to a championship. That said, what MLB 23 introduces to it is the Negro Leagues. And the way that they have included the Negro Leagues into this game is with partnership of Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And specifically, the president of that museum, Bob Kendrick, is kind of your narrator. So it is a documentary style presentation for what they are calling, it's like stories, storylines, what the game calls storylines. And other sports games have had this before as well, where you can think the Jordan mode that was in NBA 2K and now again in the newest 2K and done better. But what I think is so incredible about this presentation is the way that Bob Kendrick narrates with such passion for something that he's clearly very passionate about and something that our country hasn't done a great job of celebrating, even baseball itself. And it's getting better, but it's still not perfect. And the way that this game talks about the achievements of what these players were doing in this league that was created because of hate and became in many ways a beautiful thing that was able to, you know, the idea of persevering in spite of the most horrible things in the world, the obstacles in your way. And so you get these wonderful, optimistic and hopeful, but not ignorant of the reality background from Mr. Kendrick, kind of setting the stage for what was happening, what the country was like, who these players were. And then you play in these single player moments of, you know, again, for people who don't know the Negro Leagues, but it's like Jordan hitting the game-winning shot, playing when you have the flu, except here it's Jackie Robinson or Hilton Smith or, you know, doing this stuff of these little tiny pieces that don't overstay their welcome. You know, it's two innings, don't allow a hit, don't allow a walk. You're only allowed three balls because that's what so-and-so did back in the, and so you get to play through that, but with the commentary of what actually happened. It is one of the best implementations of that style of like, be Tom Brady, you know, take him down the field in the 2-minute drill because of one, I think the context it gives and I think how important that context is. And then also how bite-sized the actual moments are. And maybe that's just a testament to how baseball presents itself, where like a 2-minute drill in football is going to be 2 minutes, you know, or something like that. But baseball can give you that one inning or that one pitch or that one at bat. Mm-hmm. And the way they contextualize everything, it is so well done and so well produced. It alone, I think, makes this game worth it. And I think especially if you have Game Pass, which I know we say all the time, but here I mean it. Download the game. There'll be a short tutorial about like how you want to play, which the show has always done a great job of. Like, do you want this pitching style? Test it. See if you like it. Do you want this one? Test it if you like it. Then when you get through that, you can go straight into storylines. And the way that they present this stuff, I mean, it's incredible. And I'm shocked that no one's ever done it like this. And I'm so excited that it's finally come to baseball, because what these players brought to the game and was overlooked for so long, it's truly a celebration of some of the best in baseball and presented with love. It's awesome.
Wow, that's really cool. It's really cool. I hadn't even heard about that mode. Obviously, I'm really paying attention to that product, but man, that sounds really awesome. Really cool. And it's amazing that we've gotten to the point where video games are able to do stuff like that, you know, and do it with a level of authenticity. I mean, we've just gotten technologically to the point where you can present things in a way that is not oversimplified or, you know, technologically limited. I think that's cool. Very, very cool. Well, the game that I've been playing this week, I downloaded a game on a whim, bought it because it looked like my jam. I wasn't sure if I was going to really like it or not. But boy, did it turn out to be a win. I am really enjoying a game called War Tales. Now, this ties into a lot of the things that we've been talking about already this week, especially with regard to Final Fantasy and how it's changed, because this is a turn-based role-playing game. And it is so my jam. I think I got it for $25. It's on sale on Steam. But this feels like a massive game. You play a group of mercenaries, and you're moving through this medieval fantasy land, and you just do what you want to do. You find adventure. There's no wake up and, oh no, the princess has been stolen, go find her. There's no, your son was captured. There's no prompt to kick things off. No inciting incident, no grand storyline. But there are stories waiting to be discovered on various sections of this huge map. And so that it feels like a big, you know, you just start, you create a bunch of characters and you start and you can just walk in any direction and encounter, you know, little hovels or full towns and cities or everything in between, little mill or an abandoned this or a mine or a jail out in the middle of nowhere or something. And there's people there to interact with and they can ask you to do things or not. And all the while, you have to sort of manage your team of mercenaries. And so it's kind of got this like XCOM-esque layer of team members that will come and go, and you can invest in them and level them up and equip them, but then they might die in combat. And so you might have to replace them, and you can hire new people and swap people out and you just form this kind of large group of characters that you're managing from a variety of different ways. Like I fought these wolves at one point. I was walking through the woods and these wolves attacked me and I knocked one down to less than 50% of its health. And the game was like, hey, notice that you have some rope in your inventory. You can try to capture this wolf. I was like, you're darn right. I'm going to capture the wolf. Captured the wolf. Wolf's now my wolf buddy in my party. One of my characters is a wolf. It's awesome. And you manage this team, and they have they all have, you know, you can level them up. They have different, obviously different attributes that you would find in any role-playing game, you know, strength and dexterity and all that stuff. But they also, you know, they can use certain kinds of weapons. They have starting classes, and then you can specialize them as they level up into even more specialized classes. And you are also responsible for feeding and paying them. So it's got these elements of a survival game too. You get to a certain point where you have to camp, you initiate camp, and in camp, you can, you know, build new parts of your camp that are much more luxurious. You have to feed the people. So you're going to have to collect food, and you'll get recipes and stuff to cook cool stuff in camp that will give buffs to your characters or nourish them, or, you know, more, you know, a better recipe will go longer in feeding more people. And you have to maintain their happiness level, and you have to pay them because they are mercenaries. So certain times you'll find people in the world that you can recruit, and it'll be like, here's what their wages are every so often. And you're like, oh man, they seem really expensive. It's got these really cool layers of that. And when you start a new game, it's got difficulty settings for each facet of the game, which I totally appreciate. It's got like a combat difficulty level. It's got a survival-y world difficulty level. Like, how often are you going to have to feed these people? You know, so you can tweak those particular facets, because for me, I want the combat to be challenging and fun, but I get a little annoyed when it's like every two steps, my whiny characters have to be fed. So I went down on easy on that facet of it. So I think that's really cool how it is able to be dynamic that way. But man, these emergent storylines. Oh, so I'm not doing a great job of describing this game. Starting from a macro level, you are on this big map and you have your little caravan of people walking along. You have I can have a pack horse that'll like let you carry more things. I actually have two horses right now. So you have these large groups. You can have like, I think 6 or 8 people. I can't remember. But a lot of people in your party. And you're walking across this big, expansive over map that actually reminds me a lot of Civilization, the Civilization series, the later ones. It kind of looks like that. It's that panned out, you know, it's that, you know, pulled back. And you're walking along and day is changing into night, and you're going to have to camp, and you're exploring things, and there's stuff to pick up. You can find stuff on the map, and there's other bands of mercenaries walking around or merchants. You know, there's like these traveling merchant salesmen like all this stuff happening on the map that you're exploring and finding new areas. And then when you get to a point of interest on the map, you can click on that, visit it, and then it turns into this static screen that's almost like a point and click adventure game, where your characters aren't even present on the screen. You're just looking at like the stables, and you see the entire element of the stables, and there's various people sitting doing things, guys shoeing a horse, or somebody sitting at a table working on something. And you can click on those people to talk to them, and it'll zoom in and you can talk to them, and they can tell you certain things, or you can inspect them and see what they're all about. And you can always attempt to steal from people, or, you know, the game gives you just a huge variety of options as to how to approach it. I am being a very lawful and good kind of guy trying to, you know, be a hero, but
you only use your rope for good is all you're doing.
I want the wolf to learn the error of its ways. but so many of the quests or story beats that I've encountered in the world are in this delicious shades of gray area where there's no real clear good or bad approach. You really have to make an interesting decision. For example, I mean, a lot of the story of the game, at least at the beginning, is this dynamic of these refugees that are trying to survive and the sort of law in the world saying that's not okay. And so, you know, one example of a story that I got into was this woman was like, oh my gosh, my husband, he's wanted for stealing. He came into this place and he stole this stuff, but it's because we're so hungry, we needed it. And then she's like, can you go and tell his friends that they're going to hang him for stealing? All he did was steal and they're going to go hang him. So yeah, I went and found this pack of his friends, and it turns out his friends are this like militant refugee group who are like, yeah, we'll go and we'll save him. We'll slaughter all the cops, the sheriff of the town and all that stuff. And it's like, well, I'm not super down for that, you know. And it really gets you in this position of like, well, who are you going to save? Are you going to let the law hang this guy for stealing, or are you going to help his band of outlaws disrupt the local order and literally obliterate a town's protective? It's like, ooh, interesting, juicy, fun. No right answer. Just what? Where do you want to be in all this? And every quest is like that, where it's like there's not clear. I love that. I love Shades of Gray. It's so
especially
good.
Because video games are the only medium that you could really, I think, truly effectively do that, where they're handing you, Jeff, the reins and say, hey, this is a tough decision. You must make this call right now.
And far and too many games, movies. I think. What?
I was going to say, in books and movies, you can only get 50 Shades of Gray. And after that, it's
that's
like...
That's true. And then you're done. Well, then you have...
You're done.
Just wait for the game adaptation.
Far too many games, in my opinion, just let you off the hook and are like, well, you can either be the Paragon or the Vanguard. It's like, well, that's just so boring. It's so it's not interesting to actually not challenge me. It's like, I don't know. I diss Mass Effect all the time for that. The other
classic
thing is you can give
bad guy thing to do, dissing Mass Effect constantly.
Anyway, this game is called War Tales. I really dig it. The combat is all turn-based. It's like classic, cool turn-based, almost like XCOM. You get into these battles, you can place your characters all around, and then, you know, you have all these different kinds of characters and kinds of abilities. If they go down in combat, you have a chance to save them, but if they get attacked again, they're dead. And then you have to recruit new ones. Super fun. My only criticisms are the pathfinding in the game is terrible. You click on a place you want it to go, and the character's like, I can't. It's like, no, come on. You have to like babysit them through it. And then my other criticism is that it takes a long time to ramp up into your characters having anything very interesting to do in combat. For a while at the beginning of the game, you're just running up and smacking people. It's like, well, I can run up and smack. And it makes a lot of hay about getting these cool, you get these cool valor points that you can spend. And there's a lot of the strategy of the game is how you can acquire valor points. For example, the first leveling up of many of the characters is you can choose how they'll get a valor point, as far as if you end a turn next to an ally, if you end a turn next to a bad guy, or if you do the finishing blow, you'll earn a valor point. So it's a way to like generate valor points in the context of the fight. And you go, well, this character is probably, it's an archer, so they're going to probably be in the farther back. So maybe they won't be standing next to anybody, but maybe they will make the killing blow. So I'll use that as the way they get valor points. Anyway, a lot of hay is made about acquiring valor points at the beginning, but you don't really have a lot of skills that use valor points at the start. And you get them as you start getting them, you go, oh, these skills are the cool stuff. But it takes a little while to sort of build that in. And the game, the combat feels very vanilla to start. And it's not until you've played for a few hours until all your characters have a lot more fun, juicy options to do in combat where it really starts being fun. So that's a bit of a bummer. But man, the game is so interesting. The world feels so vibrant. And, you know, a lot of the things that you do have repercussions. Like, oh, the refugees have access to this, you know, another cool quest. I don't think these are spoilers because there's tons of them. Another cool quest was like, I went to this forest where these guys were cutting down, these loggers were cutting down all these trees. And these people are like, you can't cut down the trees. You're going to make the wood elves crazy and they're going to come slaughter us all. And the woodcutter's like, there's no such thing as wood elves. You morons. No wood elves. And I'm like, I genuinely don't know if there's wood elves in this game or not. I have no idea. It's like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to let the people have wood? They need the wood. Or are you going to stop them from doing this? And because you're scared of fantasy creatures. And I'm like, I don't know if there's fantasy creatures in this game or not. You know, so far I haven't seen any. So it's super fun. The questions that it puts you in the reason I brought that up is because it was like, I ended up not believing in the fantasy creatures. And it goes, okay, well, now the refugees have access to all this wood. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that means going forward, but it the game explicitly told me like that changed the world in some way. And I think there's lots of stuff like that where it's dynamic and it's because there's not one story, it really does feel like this world that's going to be sort of shaped by my actions. I'm into it for a game that's not that expensive. It really is scratching so many of my favorite itches about games. I love the turn-based combat. I love the isometric view, the sort of point-and-click adventure game where you're talking to people and you can also click on other things there and discover things. And you're searching for interactable stuff on your screens every time you're at a location. It's just really, really well done on a number of levels. It's called War Tales.
It just came out. It's on sale on Steam until April 24th, and it's Shiro Games, the same folks that made Dune Spice Wars, that also had really positive reviews of kind of doing a 4X style gameplay, and it seems like these folks know what they're doing with some of this turn-based stuff. It has over 10,000 very positive reviews, and 1.0 just came out, so it had launched in early access before, and 1.0 is now out.
Yeah. And I've gotten to the point where my characters are doing some really awesome stuff, and they have some really sick gear, and it really kind of gets to a place of getting even better than when you start a few hours in. So man, War Tales, I'm gonna be playing a lot more of it. I think I'm hooked on this game. I really like it. All right, well, I've been playing a lot of VR as well. Do we have time? You guys want to talk a quick bit of VR? These are also games that I'm probably going to bring up in the future as I play through more of them. But I wanted to put them on folks' radar. If you have a PC VR headset and you happen to already own Half-Life 2... Mods have come out for Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and Episode 2 in VR, and they are superb. Superb! Oh, so well done. It's like Half-Life Alyx level. It just feels like the games were built for VR. Incredible. And you're able to use gravity guns. I don't know if you remember Episode 1 and Episode 2, but you start with the gravity gun, and it's so great. I can't believe how perfectly these games play in VR, in first-person VR mode. They're free. They're free if you own the game. So I have been playing Half-Life Episode 1 VR. I'm excited to play Episode 2 when I finish it. It looks excellent. I mean, the games are old, right? These are old games, but it looks great for VR. It doesn't look as good as Half-Life Alyx, but it's close. It's close. And it plays super. I mean, you would not even guess that these games weren't designed this way, that there was a mod.
Can you play this with, didn't Half-Life, one of the Half-Lifes also got like a path tracing mod because that has gone out to the community. Could you play that with, that's what I'm going to be looking into. Could I combine my Cyberpunk, all the rays, all the traced everywhere with a VR mod for Half-Life? That'd be fun.
It's possible. I don't know. It's possible.
That'd be fun.
But I just wanted to put that on folks' radar because they're free and they're awesome. Now, also, another game I need to put on your radar, PC VR. I know a lot of folks are getting into VR with PlayStation VR 2. I want this next game I'm about to talk about to come on PSVR 2. It deserves it. And it is very much a Half-Life-esque. It is in conversation with Half-Life, I would say. This is a game called Vertigo 2. I never played Vertigo. I never played the first Vertigo. I heard it was pretty good, but I never played it. Vertigo 2 feels to me like Half-Life 2 to Half-Life, although Half-Life was a very well-regarded game as well. Vertigo 2 is a VR game made by one person, a single human being, and it rivals anything I've played on VR. I mean, there are elements of it that are very simplistic, and some of the graphics are a little humorous, not in a good way. But if you can overlook those little rough edges, this is a tremendous, tremendous thing, especially knowing it was made by one person.
Yeah, I'm on the Steam page right now watching the trailer. Did that one person use ChatGPT and OpenAI to make this game? Because this does not look remotely like a single person did this. This is incredible.
The idea of this game, I don't know what happened in the events of Vertigo because I didn't play it, but evidently it picks up pretty much right after that game lets off, and it very much is an homage to the Half-Life series. So if you know, Half-Life series stars Gordon Freeman as this engineer. Crazy portals start opening up at his place of work because they're doing these crazy experiments, and he has to turn into a hero because aliens show up. That's very much what happens in Vertigo 2 as well. You are employed by this guy named Brian, who works at Brian Industries. And Brian has this crazy facility where he does these wild experiments, exploring alternate dimensions and crazy technology and stuff. And what, lo and behold, he opened up a portal and crazy, dangerous alien creatures from other dimensions are showing up. The enemy design in Vertigo 2 is hilarious and delightful. There are all manner of weird, wacky things. There's like a cube-faced guy who will hop at you and, you know, with this crazy face, and you shoot the cube and he breaks apart into pieces. The game has a very good sense of humor, and it is often making fun of the fact that it is so clearly inspired by Half-Life and Portal. And so there are rooms where you'll see clear references to those games. It is very self-effacing. It's very jokey, but it is so inventive that one dude made this game blows me away. The things you will do, the places you will go, what happens, it's so clever. There's fun puzzles. It is top tier VR game right now. Graphically, not going to be a showpiece for your VR headset, but serviceable, completely fun to play. I have very positive things about Vertigo 2. I was going to wait and talk about it after I finish it, because I'm sure there's a lot of twists and turns in the story that I don't know. I mean, I hear it's a 20-hour campaign. One person made it. One person.
Guys, that one person is 22 years old, according to this Twitter bio. I've never felt so unaccomplished.
Yeah. Anyway, Vertigo 2. PC, VR, must buy, in my opinion. Must buy. I think it's also like $30. So I'll talk about it more in future episodes. But for now, that'll do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Danny Bogue, thank you for being here. It's been so much fun chatting with you, man.
Thank you both so much for having me. I've been a listener and a fan of the show for so many years, so it's been so excellent and so much fun to be here.
I'm pleased to hear that. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online.
Sure. I mean, as I said earlier, my TikTok page is at Good Gamers Club. I always find it whenever I tell people about this. I think that there's still misconceptions about TikTok. I feel like so many people today feel TikTok is still like kids dancing and, you know, meme videos and stuff. And don't get me wrong, those exist. But in the time that I've started this channel, I have found so many incredible gaming creators and gamers and fans that it's an amazing community. There's very smart people. There's very funny people. Sometimes we do like there's live streams everywhere that just kind of show up in your feed. And so, yeah, on my page, I do a lot of news, reviews, opinions.
And dancing, right?
And plenty of dancing. Thankfully, no. I don't think anyone would want to see that. So that's at Good Gamers Club. Usually when I tell people about my TikTok, some people are like, oh, do you have Instagram Reels? I'm dipping my toes, so you're welcome to follow at The Good Gamers Club on Instagram. I'm trying to figure out ways to get my content to both of those places. It's very small right now, but feel free to follow and get those videos as they come out. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it is DJ Bogue. It's like Rogue with a B. And that's just my personal page. I talk video games there, but all sorts of stuff. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Great question. A lot, I think. I think Jeff, it's busy. Do you know it's busy at that games don't stop coming out? It's always it's always busy. I write long form about video games on my newsletter, usually about one or two a month. You can find that. You can subscribe to that at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. And then when embargoes drop kind of in the middle between shows, I will blog about those. And you can find links. You can find that as well as links to everything else I'm doing at my website, which is christianspicer.com. Also, Squarespace. Thank you, Squarespace. That's a Squarespace site.
Yeah.
Man. I'm trying to think. Oh, if you missed it, I hung out with you guys for the film cast. We talked about the Super Mario Brothers movie and all of the gold coins.
Great episode.
Thank you. Well, thank you. All the gold coins that that movie has made. I think that's it. Jeff, how about you?
Well, you can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Canato, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I've got other shows. The film cast, you just mentioned it. We talk about movies and TV shows. Big episode this week. We're doing the Summer Movie Wager, which we have done for quite a number of years. We had to stop it in the middle of COVID, but it is back. And it is back with a vengeance this year. Because the summer movie slate this year is bewildering. I don't know what's going to be the number one movie, but we try to rank all the movies from 1 to 10 in terms of domestic box office. Not an easy thing to do, but it makes for some fun debate. And we're recording that tomorrow morning. Should be in the feed very soon. So check it out, Filmcast, wherever you get podcasts. And I also do We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And the fan-controlled show is all about sports and wackiness and goofery. We had a knockdown, drag out Seinfeld trivia contest where two of my co-hosts fancy themselves as Seinfeld aficionados. Our commissioner, the football's league's commissioner, Ray Austin, revealed himself to be unstoppable, unbelievable. We did 50 questions and I think he missed two. It was crazy.
Wow.
Massive Seinfeld knowledge base on him. Anyway, you can find that anywhere you get podcasts. Fan-controlled sports and entertainment. It's a fan-controlled show. And I returned to the Dungeon Run this last week and did a two-shot, the first episode of which is available on YouTube. It's fun. We did wacky. You don't need to know anything about the show to enjoy it. It was a wacky, good, fun time. We took the kids to the circus. Took the team to this wild fantasy circus that I invented in the context of the game world. And let me just tell you, it was wild. It was fun. It was wackiness ensued. So check that out, the Dungeon Run on YouTube. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift.
Danny, do you have something? Assumption? Do you have something to help people get through their week?
Yeah, I have an assumption of something that might work for people. A show that both me and my wife love. If we ever have a bad day and we come home and we're like, man, I just need something to like pick me up and just make us feel good. A travel show on Netflix called Somebody Feed Phil. It stars Phil Rosenthal, who is the executive producer on Everybody Loves Raymond from the 90s, a great sitcom. It's fantastic. I love travel shows overall because I love travel. I love food. I love meeting new people and new cultures. And he's just got this personality that is so infectious. He's curious. He's excited. He's honestly goofy and silly. And every single time that I watch it, I can't finish it without a grin on my face. Like it is a blast. So if you're looking for travel and trying to feel good, Somebody Feed Phil.
Sounds great. Somebody Feed Phil on Netflix. Christian Spicer, what's your parting gift?
I'm not going to get into like medical. I'm not a doctor. I don't know if there's any actual medicinal medical reasons for why this is a good thing. But I used to, when I was an actual athlete in college, after workouts and just in general throughout, I'd have a routine and I would take ice baths, a cold plunge, if you will. Yes, that is the sound my body makes when it hits it. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten out of doing that. But I had the opportunity recently with some friends to go to, I guess it's a spa, but it's like hurt yourself spa. It's a cold plunge is what we did. And I missed it. I love it. I feel like it kind of like a sauna or a hot tub, steam room, any of these things that I don't do that often, I guess, that maybe other people do all the time. Massages, I'll throw that into it as well. But I found it very refreshing, this idea of shocking the body and being in an ice bath type environment and then kind of resetting and stepping in. I found very therapeutic. And if you have maybe not done that before, it might be something that you too are into. And it's easy to do. You can do it at home. You don't have to go somewhere fancy. It is literally just a cold tub. And then don't stay in there too long. But you might like it. Check it out.
Did I ever tell you that Anthony Carboni and I did that cryo chamber thing?
No. That? Was that like...
We
did maybe a long time ago. We shot a pilot for a show that never went. But it was all about, you know, crazy science stuff. And we went to the... Have you ever done those cryo
I have not,
therapy?
But I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
No. I thought I was going to die. And I realized, like, oh, people come out of it feeling amazing because their body is like, we didn't die. This is awesome. I was like, oh,
cold
yeah,
plunge is not, and an ice bath is not that, was not that for me in college. I felt like a muscular reset after like a hard workout, which I think now it's like after a long hike or after this, that, and the other, the same way that I think heating or like icy hot can warm you up. Like after you're done and after you properly cool down your body after a workout, going into a cold plunge or an ice bath, I think can be therapeutic. But yes, I do not, don't push it towards death.
I'm with you on the sauna. I like getting nice and warm and cozy, but not a fan of the cold plunge. Anyway, my parting gift is a show that has taken Netflix by storm, and rightfully so. I finished it last night. It's called Beef. There's nothing like this show. Have either of you guys checked this out yet?
I'm aware of it, and I love the folks behind it, but I have not started it yet.
I have had many people in my life tell me that it's a must. So I got to add it to the queue.
It is a must. Don't get spoiled. I can tell you that this show goes places. the premise is two people get into a road rage incident in Los Angeles. And then their lives are changed. And that's an understatement because this show is... intense. The ending, I guarantee you will not see the ending coming.
is it a comedy? Is it like a dark comedy?
It's a dark comedy.
Like,
yeah, what? It's very dark, okay. But also definitely humorous, but it's introspective, it's powerful, it's interesting. It's as if somebody went, what is the farthest we could take this? And then they kept going, we could go farther. We could go farther.
Oh, man.
We could definitely go farther. It's special. Special show. It's called Beef, and it is on Netflix. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from C4, person calling themselves C4. C4 says, Tales of Maj Eyal, MAJ'EYAL, Maj Eyal, I think, is an incredible turn-based roguelike that's available for free at te4.org or on Steam for $7, $1.39 on sale. It's a massive world with tons of lore, infinite randomized loot, and many surprises to unlock. The overworld is static, but the dungeons and zones are randomized. The game features unlockable classes, races, and even talent categories, which is a group of four related skills. For example, this is made up so as not to spoil anything. You could play a dwarf fighter that wields two shields. And during your play, you unlock the talent category for traps or poisons or ranged combat because you chose to kill a particular NPC instead of saving them. Now, any future character you create could have access to those categories, depending on class or in-game event granting them access. Or maybe you spared the life of an evil wizard, so you unlocked a new type of spellcaster class. This game isn't just standard fantasy tropes. That unlocked spellcaster could be a temporal warden that have learned to work with their other selves across multiple timelines. A demonologist, a saw butcher, or a sun paladin. With the expansions, there are over 35 classes available. You can play a ghoul psionicist, but don't be expected to let them. Don't be expected to be let into a town. There's a lot more going on, which keeps it fresh, and it's fairly quick to play thanks to an auto-explore button. The game does require a bit of mental and time investment in the beginning on your part, because there's just so much going on, it might take a while before you're able to quickly parse the information on screen. The developer is constantly adding to it, even after all these years. Again, that is called Tales of Maj'eal, and it is available at te4.org. All right, if you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. We love hearing from you. And we love reading your parting gifts. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Danny Bogue and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for the fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show, merchandise, shirts, and hats at dlcswag.com. Thanks to Jesse J. Anderson for setting that up. And thanks especially to our patrons who make this show possible. We would not be able to do it without their support. Thank you, patrons. Our top-tier patrons, our Hype Train level, get their names read out at the end of every episode, which Christian is going to do right now.
Hello and welcome to Smooth Jazz DLC, where we're sending out call-outs to all the Hype Train patrons out there on this lonely road of life, looking for those sweet, sweet melodies that get you through the day and bring you closer to the human connection and the strengths of this shared hobby we love. These Hype Train patrons bring the show to all of you and help support what we do here on Smooth Jazz DLC. Those thoughts on this warm spring night go out to Jason Novak, Octavian Ratsiu, and Christian Bravery, Jad and Peter Holberg with Michael Buck and Mike Lombardo. The Spice Man Silencer wishing all of you a great night. Alongside Albert Fraildadios and Jonathan, the Spice Man forever shall endure. Stu Goss out there in this milky abyss known as existence, with Kevin Brazel, Ben, and Dan Palmino, bringing those good vibes from morning to night, with Malcolm King and Mark Gowland, plus Jonathan Putney and Will, with 1L Harris. Chris Zacharias, we're sending out these good vibes to you. Jonathan Talbert, with Scooby Diesel, Adam Denby, Sasan, and Dan Flanagan too. Anthony Goulas putting that good energy into these sound waves from my lips to your ears, bringing Andy Joyce, Matt Valdez, John Sisko, David F., and all the rest of us together on this lonely, lonely sound plane. Hyperboy 66 and Brian Jordan with Kevin Eddy, plus Rob or Wonder Rob Dominguez. We might not be close physically, but we're all next to each other when the sounds bounce from one thing to another into our ear holes, with Dwayne T. Robinson and Tyler Buckwild Brode, Stephen T. Seibert with Joe DeFrank, and let's not forget Scott Lambert out there, Showroom Ken, alongside comedian Aaron Trahan, Curtis from Louisville, bringing it to us soulfully with love and relentless Rex. Michael S., Kyle Starr, Riley Knox, and Rob Ricksman, reminding all of us that Hank Patton, Cheesy Bob, Victor Valenzuela, Matt Bradley, Jeff Luxack, Mitchell Ness are all part of one consciousness that is this here smooth jazz DLC with Mitchell Ness, Jimmy Radcliffe, Scott Hughes, Jenny, Nate, Zachary White, alongside Yick, Soren Silk, Travis, Jackson, Michael Stadler, Nick, Strauss Klein, and Josh Peek, plus Tyler Wigger, you, me, and the rest of the Smooth Jazz DLC family. Enjoy this oblivion because it is the experience we have. I'm also told to let you know we are currently out of oat milk.
All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.